Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door.
Hi, welcome back to our podcast, The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori.
We are always laughing when we start this because it's normally, like, we say this every time, but it's like the fifth time we've tried it or the third time we've tried it. And usually by then we're laughing. So anyways, welcome back. So we're kind of springing off of our last episode about getting uncomfortable and doing the hard thing and saying the hard yes, and everyone can do something. Mm-hmm. And shifting into the idea of the...
What does that look like on an organizational level?
Yeah.
As part of that.
Yeah. So as always, most of our podcast episodes are based off of things that either are happening current day or trends that we've noticed or things that we've heard, in the whisperings of Western New York. That kind of make us go, okay, we need to address this, or we need to talk about this, or there needs to be an episode for this. So one of those trends, I guess, that we've heard often from the very beginning of the podcast is that organizations, and specifically religious organizations, and more specifically churches, mm-hmm. are, and those affiliated with churches. The trend is that these organizations and these churches have a fear of being called out on our podcast.
if you're not doing it wrong,
right,
you have nothing to fear.
Sure. Right. So yeah,
it's not like we've called people out for a hangnail.
No, or called people out with misinformation.
Right. Although they would beg to differ.
Yeah, they would.
Yes, but I know. But the truth of the matter is we have not called anyone out, even after a first out. Like, yeah. If there's one glitch in the communication system, we're not like, oh my gosh, can you believe they did whatever?
Right.
That's not what has
That's
ever
not
happened.
What we do.
No.
Yeah. So there's two problems here. Number one, that there's, yeah, like that's not a trend of us. Like, we also, if you go back and listen to the podcast, every single time we've called out an organization, there has been multiple attempts made on our part to hold them accountable, to point out the injustice or
the concern for how they're functioning.
Right. Or the concern for safety of children, prior to us ever creating an episode about it. Like, usually that is our last resort.
Yes.
Yes. So let's review. Yeah. Chapel. Okay. So we went back and forth with the chapel in Buffalo
for about a year and a half. Yeah.
Before we finally on the podcast said, guys, the chapel at Cross Point and all across Western New York is this way. Same with Forest View Church, right? Mm-hmm. We sent emails, we made phone calls saying, hey, these people are attending your church. This is the history. This is the backstory. And ultimately, so we did an episode about it.
We did.
And he finally asked them, my parents were attending this church, and he finally said that, asked them to not be there anymore. Same thing with Cornerstone, right? We talked in depth with Cornerstone back and forth. We gave John Sherholtz, information, and we did a lot with and for them prior to ever talking about them on the podcast. But even prior to talking to him about them on the podcast, I distinctly remember John Sherholtz saying to us, my board of directors is very afraid of ending up on the podcast. Which again, so, okay, we'll get to why that's so wrong. Christian Central Academy, mm-hmm. same thing, right? We called out one of their coaches.
We try to go back and double check our information because we don't want to be obviously saying something that is inaccurate. Not only would that discredit us, which we are trying very hard not to do, but it's not wise.
Right. We just wouldn't do that. We have morals and
right. higher integrity.
Ground. Yeah. But okay, so Christian Central Academy, they had a volunteer who had been a coach, who had a well-documented history of soliciting sex from a minor online. And again, it was like we went to the principal and we said, hey, are you aware of this? Gave them every opportunity to respond. And when they didn't, then yeah, we went to the podcast. Because why? Okay, why do that? Why go to the podcast? Well, because there are parents, there are people, or there are children who are vulnerable who would otherwise not know. There are so many people out there who have come to us and said, I would never have known unless I was listening, and I'm so thankful that I did. Let's talk about the opposite that has happened. There's an organization in Niagara Falls that works primarily with children in the inner city. And my mother, a couple of years ago, I don't even remember when, attempted to volunteer with them. And the organization director came to us and said, I'm so grateful that my wife and I had listened to the podcast because I would have let her volunteer. But because I had listened to the podcast and I knew and recognized her name, I did not. He actually met with her and he took the meeting and essentially said, I listened to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. And so therefore you absolutely may not volunteer with kids. So again, if you're asking yourself, well, why take it to the podcast? Because of people like that, because there are those people out there that will forever make better choices because now they know.
And by the way, we're not naming the organization out of respect for them.
Yeah.
Because we don't know for sure that they would want to be named.
Yeah.
Which when you are landing in defense of the vulnerable, you will always be given that respect from us.
Right. So the bottom line in this trend that we're seeing is that these organizations and these churches and these places that are affiliated with these churches, they're afraid of accountability. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. Why?
Somehow people are more upset with us for talking about what is going wrong than the organizations that are actually doing it wrong.
Absolutely.
Like, that's the insanity of it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We get way more pushback than I'm sure that they ever will. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That, I feel like, segues us into the reality that everybody should be afraid about the things that we're talking about.
Right.
But on a very opposite way, right? The fear of the podcast is fear of accountability. They're afraid that they're doing it wrong. They know they're doing it wrong. And so they're afraid of that blowing up their bottom line.
I think that there is an ability to be in denial and to convince yourself that it's fine, that you're the victim. I mean, goes back to Dr. Michael Salter reported on the statistic that said that when women are involved in child exploitation, society wants to believe that it was only because she was being abused and therefore she was now exploiting children. That basically it was her partner who was doing it and she was just forced to go along. But the research does not support that. Michael Salter reported that the research says that honestly, when women are involved, they are either equal participants or they are the one leading the exploitation. But rather than people be so upset about that being true, he got all kinds of pushback because he was reporting on the statistic. People were more upset about him saying it than the statistic itself.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about here.
That's what we're talking about.
That's craziness.
Yeah. But I do think that it comes back to just these places not being willing to be held accountable, right? Again, right. Because, again, the trend, the history of the podcast is we give them every opportunity to course correct, to say, yep, absolutely. We recognize that we have a volunteer who has a history of soliciting sex with a minor. And that, thank you for bringing that to our attention. Honestly, like, don't even say thank you. We don't give a crap about that. Like,
right.
Just do
it.
The change, right?
Right?
Don't put kids at risk. That's the reality, right?
So I'm thinking about the fact that, you know, in all of our back and forth with the chapel, ultimately, we were asked, what is it that we want to see? And one of the things we said, and again, none of this was in the podcast. We were not, at this point, we were not even talking about these specifics on the podcast. What we said was, we would like an apology from David Drake for publicly saying that he is happy to be in fellowship with Kate's parents. And we would like there to be some public acknowledgement of what has gone wrong. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until we got a really, really bad apology and no follow through initially with making that different that we started talking about that on the podcast.
Right.
We read that apology after, mm-hmm. first off, we should never have gotten that really bad apology. Any adult person who does not know how to give a good apology, particularly if you are in a counseling role,
the counseling pastor,
there is no reason, no reason why that should have even happened. But we didn't blow that up on the podcast until we had tried to make it right privately.
Right. Over and over again, we have tried to make it right privately. But so what do we do? Do we just sit on our hands, right? Do we just say, oh, wow, that stinks that they like continuously don't listen to victims, that they continuously allow perpetrators to sit in their pews? Do we just say that? Do we just say it's fine? So that's not really who we are.
No.
So again, the fear is the fear of accountability. There should be a fear, though, of what is going on. And so I think, again, it's that flip side of the coin of, we all should be very afraid of the information that we're sharing, not about the organizations, but about the reality of what is going on in some of these organizations.
Absolutely.
When we were in Boston, which I know we talk all the time about Boston, but we sat in a room with 12 other people from different areas of Massachusetts and different areas of DCF, and they were afraid. They were overwhelmed, but they were afraid and overwhelmed with what they may have missed. They weren't like, oh my gosh, these people are going to call us out on a podcast and say that DCF of Massachusetts is terrible. They were like, I spent all of last night combing through old cases because I know I've missed this. And now that you've brought it to my attention, I absolutely want to do it better. So I am afraid. I'm afraid I've missed it. And I'm overwhelmed with the amount of work that's in front of me now.
Right.
That is the fear. That is the righteous fear that we should be having. That is the accurate way to respond to this.
Right. That is what the expectation would be, that we would be hearing from organizations, whether they are secular or church organizations, saying, oh, wow, tell us what we need to know so that we can learn how to do this better.
And we are.
Yes. Outside of Western New York.
Elsewhere in the country. Right. Yeah. So again, the fear is really, it's misplaced. It's about the amount of damage and harm to the organization rather than the damage and harm to the survivors.
It's really very upside down. And
yes, and backwards.
We said it last time on the podcast, the quote about the only thing necessary for evil to reign is for good people to do nothing.
Right.
And that is so very, very true. Bystanders, people who know about the bad thing, but they're not doing something about it, like they are equally culpable.
And we're talking about organizations such as churches that specifically position themselves as advocates for the vulnerable, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about churches who have access to kids in a unique way, and that if they were equipped, if they would allow themselves to be equipped with the information that we are sharing and have been shared, they would be in an amazing position to intercede on behalf of a child.
Which is how we were engaged with the chapel to begin with, because we believed that they were in a position to help the vulnerable. Unfortunately, they proved themselves not worthy of the task.
Right. But over and over again, Christian Central Academy, a Christian school, we've said repeatedly with our nonprofit organization, Mezzo, we've said repeatedly, schools are in a very unique position to build relationships and have encounters with children who could be at risk, right? And especially knowing that the statistics being that we're talking about white, middle-class, suburban kids, who do you think goes to private schools like Christian Central Academy?
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
Right. So they're in a very unique position, and yet their fear is not, oh my gosh, what don't we know that we should know to protect these children? Their fear is, what is being talked about on the podcast going to do to our bottom line?
Right.
That's disgusting.
It is.
I'm sorry, but it just is.
Well, okay. If you're talking about a for-profit industry, right? Everybody knows the score. Everybody knows when I go into Walmart, Walmart is there to make a profit. Certainly, the expectation should be that they will behave in a way that is morally upright. But we know the deal. Their bottom line is they're making a profit. But if you are talking about a church or a Christian environment, the truth of the matter is there is some amount of expectation that there is a care and concern for the vulnerable.
Yes, because the IRS does not give nonprofit and 501c3 status to organizations that do not have a purpose or a mission for the greater good.
Right.
I learned that because I had to go through and jump through all the hoops of the IRS for our nonprofit to gain that status. They don't just hand it out because you're like, I really like Jesus, and so I'm going to do something
good. And I don't
want
to pay taxes.
Yeah. That's not how that works. Right. So if you are calling yourself an organization that has that and that is there for the greater good, what are you doing for the – but you don't – you're concerned about your bottom line. You're concerned about your donors. You're concerned about who's not going to be sitting in your pews and how many people are sitting in your pews. Yes?
Yes.
I mean, that's what
we're
seeing.
How else do you explain it? How else do you explain it?
So, again, it brings us back to the question of, so what do we do about it, right? How would it feel for us to just be like, wow, that's crazy, and just let it go and not sit, right? So I've heard from some people in my world, I just don't think I could do what you do. I just don't think that I'm not brave enough. I'm not whatever. I don't think that's true. I think that everybody could easily
do something.
Yes. But by nature, Lori and I, neither of us are the type of people to just lay down and shut up.
Right.
For better or for worse.
Sometimes a little both.
No, but truthfully, some of the worst abuse that ever happened to me was when I fought back, when I changed my name from Katie to Kate. When I started pushing back, even in the smallest of ways, when I was like in early high school, I like dyed my hair a different color, and that definitely wasn't allowed. And horrible abuse ensued as a result of that. So it was,
you weren't surprised by that. You knew when you dyed your hair
that was going to happen. Right. But did I stop? No, I'm doing a podcast talking about my experience. So obviously, no, obviously I still am fighting back. But another part of that, though, is when it comes to fighting for somebody else. So there was times that I would push back just for my own whatever, and then horrible abuse ensued because of that. But then there was the fighting and the pushing back when there was somebody else who was going to be abused. So I would see pictures of other girls that were also being abused in the same circle. And the fight was this burning inside of me that was like just hysteria, like absolutely not, and fighting on their behalf. So that's just ingrained in me. Sometimes I very much wish it wasn't, because it may have been an easier road to just give up and die. But that's unfortunately not in me.
It is also something that you is part of your identity that you can feel good about. That you are a person who stands for the vulnerable.
Okay, but you're the same type of person. Like, you shared with me that you sat with the smelly kid on the bus.
I did sit with the smelly kid on the bus.
That's so sad for you, but...
From the very beginning, when I was young, I was aware of the people around me in ways that I wish I wasn't sometimes. Like, I was aware of people that were hurting, and I did what I could to make a difference. It has been baked into just how I function. I didn't set out in college to be a social worker. I was going to be an international business major.
That's wild.
Ended up a social worker.
We just talked about this on a podcast episode, and I'm still like,
I know.
I can't even imagine you in like a corporate.
No, it would definitely not go well.
That
would
is not your
definitely
life.
Not go well. No. But once my eyes were opened to the ways that the vulnerable were being poorly treated, I couldn't turn away from it. That's just the bottom line.
Yeah, I feel the same. I mean, yeah, I feel the same way even now as an adult. I just was doing research on a specific culture of people that we may have an opportunity to ultimately train and speak to. And as I was reading the statistics about this specific group of people, I was angry and I was like completely lit up. Like at 11 p.m. I'm like, babe, did you know? He's like, oh my God, please go to bed. But yeah, I feel that deeply.
It matters.
Yeah. I also feel like the idea of you being who you are, we've talked about this so many times. If you were different than who you are, I would never have been able to get the help that I needed, right? So we've talked about this a million times that, like, you were just the right person for me to be able to get out and to be able to get help and to be able to hold enough of it and hold enough space for it. And that's a unique type of person.
Well, I don't, maybe unique is not quite the right word. It's not commonplace, I think, but we, part of our point here is that both on an organizational level and on a personal level, be uncommon, right? Yeah. Be somebody that gets out of your bubble, outside of your comfort zone, outside your narrow, narrow lane, and do what's needed to show up for the people around you. Because if I had stayed in my very narrow therapist lane, Kate would not have felt safe.
No.
And it would have changed everything.
Yeah. No, I probably wouldn't have come back.
That doesn't mean that there aren't boundaries, though.
Yes. Right. And so, yes, to clarify that, because we've gotten so much pushback on that as well. Lori did stay within her boundaries. I know that maybe some people listening to the podcast, you're meeting us at a place in our relationship where we don't have a client therapist relationship anymore. It's different, right? Mm-hmm. So that's how you meet us on the podcast. But prior to that, even though, no, did you stay in that very narrow behind the therapist veil of never, ever showing emotion and never answering, you know, whatever. No, that wouldn't have worked, but you did stay within boundaries. And so I think that's really important to make that point that you did keep your ethical standards. You didn't cross lines that were outside of your ethics as a social worker and a clinician.
So let me just say, when people are in my office, it is a very personal, very vulnerable place that people find themselves in when they come to therapy. And I do feel very strongly that if I were to stay, if I were to be the quintessential TV version of a therapist where I've got a clipboard and a pen and I just kind of write notes and stay very clinical, that does not make for a safe space. And so I do feel okay about people saying, how was your Thanksgiving, for example, right? And I will say how my Thanksgiving was. But it's going to be the best possible version of how my Thanksgiving was. It's going to be, it was really nice. Thank you. My kids were in town or my, you know, whatever that was. But it's fluffy up here, light. It's not actually talking about how I feel. And it's 3.5 seconds and then it's shifted back to where it should be. Not because I don't appreciate that people care about me or see me as a human being, but that's not why we're there.
Right.
And that's what our relationship was until I stopped being your therapist.
Right.
And since then, you've learned all kinds of things
but
about me.
If you hadn't had those 3.5 seconds and you stayed with a clipboard and a pen and like didn't, I would never have come back.
Right.
Absolutely not.
Who like, would?
Who,
I wouldn't.
Who would? I know. Right. That's just
that's a terrible gross. Way to have yeah. that be. But as the clinician, it is important to be able to be a human, but also always, always, always remember this space is not about me. And that is, I think, a fundamental change that has happened right. since I stopped being your therapist is there yeah. is space for me mm-hmm. now in this relationship mm-hmm. where there wasn't before.
Mm-hmm. After we didn't have that relationship anymore and we moved into the space that we're in now, which is there is a lot that I know about you now that I definitely didn't know. So
right. But that idea, be uncommon, right? Whether you are therapist, or you are the leader of an organization, or you are a teacher, be uncommon. Get outside of, not outside of what is professionally appropriate mm-hmm. or ethical, but be outside of what is the most rigid version or the most self-comforting version of the role that you play.
Yeah. It's also being mindful and a tiny bit fearful of the right thing.
Right.
Right. Because right now, the trend that we're hearing, especially from our local churches and our affiliated church organizations, is that they're fearful of accountability instead of fearful for the vulnerable people that they are entrusted with.
And honestly, I would have so much more respect for an organization that would come forward and say, okay, we clearly need to get some stuff figured out over here because, you know, as we're having this conversation, I'm realizing that we've got some things wrong, but we really also don't want to be blown up on the podcast. Can we do something? Because mm-hmm. it does matter. Like, we don't want people thinking negatively about our organization. It will in fact affect our bottom line. And that does affect our ability to do whatever it is that we were already doing for people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be honest about it. We're not pretending like we don't understand that bad press. Or church organizations have to care about that too.
Yeah, of course.
It's not that you shouldn't care about that at all. It's that you should not care about that more than owning it and getting it right.
Right. But they do. That's they do. The trend is they care more about the image. They care more about the bottom line than they do about okay, so yeah, we may have done it wrong, but can we work with you? Can we figure out how to make it right?
Yes. And that's we're all about that.
Yeah, all
we're
about
all
it.
About that.
Yeah. Yes. We're lovely people. Anyways, as always, thank you for listening.
If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.